If I won't be able to hold a good conversation, if I feel big and ballooning, if I turn up today, if I can't be appreciated, I won't be appreciated at all. And if I look red and confusing, well, I am all of the above. As I've been feeding the witches, feeding them straw, feeding the witches, the witches. You'd think they'd have no milk, they'd have no honey. You'd think they would prefer petroleum. And you'd think they'd have rat's eyes, not like Aunt Sally. You'd think they wouldn't smile just like your mom. Feeding the witches, feeding them straw. I am falling for witches, the witches who live next door. If I start wrong, too drunk to continue, and if I can't shout, I can't do joining the witches, feeding them straw. I'll be feeding the witches, yes, I'll be joining the witches, feeding them straw. I'll be joining the witches.
Find no love, no sympathy. What kind of love? It's him and me, that's what he said. But I can't choose between a vegan and a pothead. So I chose you because you're sweet and you give me lots of loving and you eat meat. Came my only man of the hour. You never lie and you don't cheat, and you don't have any baggage tied to your forefeet. Do I deserve to be the one who will feed you breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and take you to the park at dawn? Will you really be my only man of the hour? Flowers, they will only die. And though we'll never take a shower together, I know you'll never make me cry. You never argue, you don't even talk. And I like the way you let me lead you when we go outside and walk. Will you really be my only man of the hour? My only man of the hour. My only man of the hour.
Thank you. jarire ye ko barga bu yar yara jarire ye una fakiru rosig mane jadi watore marwa ko barga bu yar yara jarire ye ko barga bu yar yara jarire ye una fakiru rosig mane jadi watore fora so so musulu be ma fatuye kini yari yara kini ya so so lu kwansiga kona kini fatu be meme tumaro fatu be me ala barajo mi bonya joti doya aori uri kame tumaro moni mama kai kini la uma yara kelani kavate ula janyara a ula janyara yani lannurte ula janyara
It couldn't pull Listening to Spoiler Alert Radio, conversations on the craft of filmmaking. I am your host, Tony Panacchia. On this episode of Spoiler Alert Radio, we speak with cinematographer Lowell A. Meyer. Lowell was born and raised in New York City and studied cinematography and photography at Emerson College in Boston before moving to Los Angeles to begin his career. Earlier in his career, Lowell worked on several music videos, commercials, and short films, developing a reputation for intimate, performance-driven camera work. His breakthrough feature films include Thunder Road and Greener Grass, and in 2019 he was named one of the rising stars of cinematography by American Cinematographer magazine. Lowell's other work includes Topside, Knock at the Cabin, Cattle Lake, and the television series Servant. More recently, Lowell has collaborated with director Daniel Roer on two acclaimed feature films, the documentary The AI Doc, or How I Became an Apocalypse Optimist, and Tuner, a taut thriller about a gifted piano tuner whose hypersensitive hearing pulls him into the dangerous world of safecracking. Welcome, Lowell A. Meyer, to Spoiler Alert Radio.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
All right. First of all, can you talk a little bit about your background and how you developed an interest in film generally and photography in particular before deciding to pursue that as a career?
Yeah, of course. I grew up in Queens and, you know, my parents had just a few cameras lying around the house. And I just remember at one point as like a 6 or 7 or 8 year old and going, why is there this video camera thing in the closet? What does this do? And me and my brother starting to play around with it and make little videos. And then I remember my dad specifically saying, you know, you can do stop motion animation if you just hit the button really quick once and then hit it again really quick again. And, you know, making weird little stop motion things on videotapes. And then that became Hi8. And I grew up in the age before cell phones. So having a camera like that was sort of unique as opposed to something that was like every day. And I remember in school, anytime there was like the option of you could write a paper or you could make a video, kind of a visual essay, I always chose that. I always thought that would be way more fun. And then that kind of coincided with me getting into skateboarding, and skateboarding sort of goes hand in hand with filming your trick, you know, skate video. Then it sort of all really blew open when I found my dad's 35 millimeter SLR film camera, and I got like a Photography for Dummies book. And then the sort of next maturation of that was getting into films and watching them and realizing that there are crews that make them. And back in that early 2000s with DVDs and Blu-rays, there were a lot of behind the scenes featurettes. And you'd see the director and the DP and the AD and the stunts and special effects and all that. And it was around the time in my life where it was like, oh, I might have to like go to college and pick what I want to study and start thinking about what do I want to do with my life. And that just felt like kind of a cheat code of, well, you don't have to wear a suit and tie. You don't have to sit at a desk or at a computer. You get to be on your feet and you get to travel and work with people and make magic and art and be creative. And yeah, I just started to actually make like short films and my college submission videos. And then it was just, okay, well, what part of this do I want to do? Do I want to be the director, the cinematographer? Or I knew I wanted to be kind of camera oriented, but I remember at the time getting really inspired by people like Steven Soderbergh and the Mexican New Wave directors like Alfonso Cuarón and Iñárritu. And once I went to Emerson College, I realized, yeah, the director's role is much more about story and writing and performance and acting. But I just really liked the camera, and then started to discover more lighting in college. And I thought, oh, wow, this upgrades your images. This makes it look cinematic. So yeah, I just caught the bug and just kept going deeper and deeper and deeper.
So then the feature film Thunder Road is the story of a cop struggling to cope with his mother's death in a divorce and custody battle. The short on which it is based used one long take for the entire film. While the feature didn't go that far, there are fewer edits and more lingering shots. For example, the opening funeral scene. Did this approach take some adjustment, focusing extensively on performance and intimacy more than movement or angles?
Jim Cummings, the director and the writer, loves the oneer, and he loves kind of baking everything in. And you rehearse and you rehearse and you rehearse, and then you just drill down and you shoot one thing over and over and over, and you react to every take and you dial it in, but you're locking yourself into something. And that's its own unique joy. It's almost more fun as a cinematographer, right? To aim for something so ambitious. I think everybody on set comes alive when you do a oneer, because it becomes like theater and every piece of the shot is extremely high stakes. Like something as simple as like the door didn't open when it was supposed to, or I panned to the right and the extra forgot to hit their mark, and then the whole shot's ruined, even though the extra is like the smallest part of the shot or something. You know, now they're suddenly the biggest part and they become amplified because every part of a oneer is important. And Thunder Road, I remember when we were going into it, because it was based on a short film that was a oneer, one of the first conversations I had with Jim was, how do we approach a feature? The feature's not going to be a big oneer. We're not trying to do like a Birdman or a Rope or an Adolescence. We're doing a bunch of scenes that take place in different times and places. Is each scene a oneer? You know, and I remember while shotlisting, that was a big topic of conversation. And when do you choose to do one? And when do you choose to do a scene with coverage? And how does that affect how you shoot it? Thunder Road had a child in the movie for a lot of it. Sometimes a oneer with a child is a lot harder to achieve because sometimes their performance isn't as locked in as an adult. Sometimes you have to have a cutaway. So performance was a big topic when it came to do a oneer or not to. And I'd say for me, it's often about, okay, if we know we're going into a movie with a lot of oneers, how do we differentiate all of them? How do we make sure they don't kind of become a gimmick or a one-trick pony, or it's the same camera move every time? And so that comes down to like blocking. That comes down to what is the intention of the scene, whose perspective it is. All of these things, once you just start to answer a few fundamental questions, which are really no different from any scene, you're just now approaching it knowing there's only going to be one shot. Once you answer a lot of those fundamental questions, then the answer sort of comes into view very quickly. And then you back that up by scouting and blocking with the actors, and those will have some influence. You know, you go in with intention. It's just like anything. You just come in with intention and say, this character is seen. We want them to feel this way. We want to look at them this way. We want to see their POV this way. And then it all kind of just builds from there. And it just sort of seems to take care of itself for the most part.
Right. So then Greener Grass is a darkly satirical look at suburban life and creates a stylized, almost too perfect backdrop for the story. Can you talk about your use of color and lighting to